Huzzah! And welcome to Knights of the Hardcover, a podcast dedicated to discussing and summarizing fantasy books, their lore, and all of the things we love about them. My name is Brandon Castle, your Jarl of the West Coast, and joining me for this round of fresh roasted lattes. Oh, before I forget, here's your monthly payment of cinnamon rolls for being on the pod. It's Chris Lauer.
Hey, howdy, howdy, howdy. Been sipping on lattes all day, getting ready for the pod. Good to see you guys.
Glad to have you here too, Chris. And also joining us today, he made it very clear that he will in fact vamp on customers if he works here. It's Zach Misick.
Hey, everyone. Don't mind me, just getting an entire village addicted to caffeine.
Yeah, yes. Hey. Drug purveyors, drug smugglers, we love it all.
Great.
Cool. And it's across... Yeah, it's across borders too. They got the Gnomish people involved in it too. So definitely going to be some federal laws broken here. But today we are covering the 2022 fantasy novel Legends and Lattes by Travis Balltree. This
2022,
is kind of
Didn't know this was such a new book.
Yeah, February I think of this year. Okay. And it exploded. We'll talk about why later. Yeah. This one really, really took off. And it's become one of the best books of the year according to most. So excited to talk through it with you guys. I think we might be contrary to the most, but we'll see. We'll see what our thoughts are here. You know, today I got a call actually from my next door neighbor. He's about 80 years old, maybe 85. Asking me how to watch bowl games for football. And I was like, oh, well, you just, you know, watch them on your TV. And he was like, oh, but it's on ESPN. How do I get ESPN without having cable? And so I had to like explain to him what a Roku was. I had to explain to him what an app was. I had to explain to him that ESPN can be on the app. And he asked me,
holy cow,
how do they have to come out and hardwire that? So I have to run a wire to my computer. And I was like, oh boy, I'm gonna have to explain Wi-Fi to this guy too. Jesus Christ.
Dang. Why did he cut the cord if he didn't know what the backup plan would be?
So they didn't cut the cord. He's always just had like the general cable that you get free. So he gets like four channels, you know, or whatever. And that's just how he gets all his information. And ESPN was one that you could tack on to it before, but now you can't. And so he just has no idea where to go from here. I don't think he even knows what a cord cutter is, to be honest. But anyway, so I've been dealing with that for about half my day today, too. So
that's nice of you.
I don't know. I'm kind of scared of this guy, so I'm kind of forced into it. So,
what's scary about him? He's 85 years old.
Yeah, he was a Marine, and he says a lot of things that scare me.
Fair enough.
Fair enough. But anyways, I just thought that was an interesting story. I'm going to have to deal with that over the next couple of weeks. So I'll let you know how it goes. We're going to try to install a Roku for him. So like helping my parents, this should be a nightmare.
Tell him that when he gets ESPN, that he can bundle it with Hulu and Disney Plus. And he's not going to know what to do about that.
His head will explode if I use the word Hulu. There's no way he's going to be able to comprehend that one.
Well, can you even watch the bowl games on ESPN Plus? I know a lot of those are like locked to like ESPN proper.
Ooh, I don't know.
Oh my God.
So you're telling me if you get ESPN Plus, you don't automatically get ESPN with it?
Nope. A lot of that stuff
is
locked.
Silly.
Because ESPN has all these like contracts with the cable companies to not put some of these big ticketed games on ESPN Plus. So you need to have like a cable provider login to be able to stream ESPN.
Man, I never thought I'd say it, but us switching to subscription, Netflix was the worst thing to ever happen to TV or media in general. I want cable again now. I want to go back.
Just make a streaming
cable.
Yeah, no, exactly. I have like $200 of subscriptions a month now. Like, where the hell did all these come from?
But you don't need that. You can like cut them all out. With cable, you can't. You just have to have it like all or nothing.
Whatever with your stupid logic. anyways, let's talk some lattes. That's enough technology talk. Let's go back to the good old days when coffee was new to the world. So I'm going to start off here running just a quick summary. It's probably longer than it needs to be for a pretty short book, but I want to make sure that we hit all the very important parts of this book. So here we go. The story starts off with our main character, Viv. A large orc has decided to retire from being a warrior to own a coffee shop. Her last mission was to get something from something known as the Skalvert stone from a Queen Skalvert. After the mission, she goes into the city of Thune, buys an old stable, and hides the stone under the floorboards. This is the location of her coffee shop. We learn that no one knows what coffee is, and Viv had found it in a gnomish town on one of her missions. Viv hires a hob named Cal to help her renovate. During renovation, she is visited by a real asshat of a man named Lark from an organization known as the Madrigal, or the local mafia, basically. They will tell her she needs to pay them monthly, or bad things are going to happen to the cafe or to the coffee shop, to which she responds, fuck off, and then displays her sword on the wall behind the main counter. Slowly, the coffee shop comes together, and she gives Cal his first taste of coffee, which he loves. We learn that the stone is said to grant good fortune to the person that holds it. And the store is in the middle of an intersecting ley lines, which means it's the perfect place for the stone to work. Later, Viv hires a succubus named Tandri to help out the store. One of Viv's old friends, a gnome Rune, shows up to deliver her coffee machine and also leaves her a blink stone to contact them if she gets into trouble. Cal names the shop and creates a sign to hang. It's called Legends and Lattes. Tandri starts an advertising campaign to get customers, and they start flowing, including a ward named Hemington, a local farm boy named Pendry, who plays music, and a dire cat named Amity. Another of Viv's friends, Fenis, shows up and appears to be looking for the Skalvert Stone. One of the Viv's customers, Mr. Thimble, is a baker and agrees to make treats for the shop. Basically, he invents the cinnamon roll. He continues to make sweet treats, and their customer base is growing quickly. Lark and Kellen, who they both work for the Madrigal, and Kellen used to talk to Tandri in college. They come back to threaten the shop and Tandri. Viv uses the Blink Stone to get the old crew to come help out. One of them knows the Madrigal and sets up a meeting between them and Viv. Viv meets the Madrigal, who is just an old lady, but she knows about the Skalvert Stone. Venice told her, we found out later. They make a deal. After that, Viv and Tandri go on a date-like thing where Viv has feelings for Tandri, but Tandri doesn't know, but Viv doesn't know if Tandri reciprocates those feelings. Viv has Hemington set a ward around the shop to warn if Fenis is nearby. Fenis shows up because he wants to get the stone, but then Amity the cat saves Viv. Viv is scared that if she loses the stone, her luck will reverse and she'll lose her friends in coffee shop. The Madrigal leaves them alone if they send her a bag of cinnamon rolls every week. Fenis returns again and burns down the cafe. Viv and Tandri escape with coffee machine and money, but the Skalvert Stone is gone. Viv stays at Tandri's place and they eventually kiss. The whole town bands together to help them rebuild the shop with their own unique skills, even the Madrigal. They find out from a gnome that the stone doesn't actually bring good luck. It brings like-minded people together. Oh, that's so sweet. They figure that new revelation will just bring a bunch of douches to Fenis because he was also a douche, and they'll eventually kill him. They don't have to worry about him. The coffee shop is rebuilt better than before. They have a grand reopening, which is a huge hit. Viv had Cal build an extra room and asked Tandri to live there. That's a little soon for an early relationship. She also makes Cal, Tandri, Thimbles all equal partners of the business. And then eventually one of the Madrigal's men finds Fenis and asks for the stone for the Madrigal, and Amity's kills him, I guess we assume. So Fenis dies in the end. That's the book. If it seems like that was all over the place, the book itself was kind of just one thing after another happening. So that's how I wrote the summary. I'm curious. I have a lot of pretty strong feelings about the book and not so many strong feelings about the book, but what were your guys' thoughts overall?
It's funny because I don't think I have very many strong feelings about this book at all. I think that's kind of a hallmark of how I felt about it. My final rating I put at a 6 at the end of the day. I thought it was fine, but it was really far away from grabbing my attention or really my admiration. The ending really saved it for me. I was going to put it at a 5, but I did think that it ended well. I liked how it ended. I'm glad the book exists. I would recommend it to somebody who likes reading in general, but they're not really like fantasy people. And I think that's kind of what the author was going for. So I think the book succeeded at its goals. Might not be the book for me, but in general, positive.
Yeah, I think that all makes sense. Yeah, I guess I got a little ahead of myself saying strong feelings. I have a lot of feelings about this book, but maybe not so much strong feelings. All right, Zach, what do you think?
Yeah, I agree with Chris. Like, this book knew what it was, and it didn't try to be anything else. I probably would rank it like a 6, 6.5. I really enjoyed it for what it was, kind of like a cozy fantasy. Like, the baking stuff kind of got a little annoying to me. I kind of wish that they didn't have like a reveal every time they made something like they did. But I really enjoyed it. I like the idea of watching like a fantasy character actually like retire and like start like a new life and have some like positive fun moments. Like, so often we read these like grim, dark stories and you just wish like the character wouldn't go on the adventure or whatever. So it's kind of nice, like, see a character actually like, no, I'll settle down. So yeah, I'll give it a 6. I thought it did what it needed to do and nothing more.
Yeah. I feel the same way as you guys, but for different reasons, I think, from you specifically, Zach, I guess, I would give the book 4.5, maybe 5, at a max. I love the idea of the story, like you were saying, Zach, but I really liked the parts where they were like doing the reveals and like the new recipes and all of that. I thought that was the parts I liked the most, and kind of like the relationship building and stuff like that. I didn't care so much about magical. Didn't care about any of that. Didn't care about most of the plot points. I liked just this, the, we're building a coffee shop. Here's how it works. And it, like, they were turning it into like a modern day, like Starbucks, basically, you know, where they had like AC and they had like all these tasty treats. They created the latte, essentially. Or they made the latte famous, I suppose. So I liked those aspects of the book. I didn't really like the actual story itself. That really made me boring. And I think the idea for the book itself as a whole was an incredible idea for a book and needs to be done more, but by different authors, maybe. I didn't really like this approach or this writing style of it.
I think this guy, I think this author could improve with another book in this style. I wouldn't want to come back to any of these characters. I think that that they would benefit from just the starting over, all new characters, trying to find a new formula. But I agree with you, Brandon. A lot of my favorite parts were like creating the AC, or when they updated the menu. Now we have these like little biscuits or whatever. I thought that was charming. Whereas when they tried to like shoehorn in the Madrigal, it just didn't work super well for me.
Yeah. Yeah, I agree with that. Was there a character in this book that you guys specifically like really liked or would like to see in another book? I know, Chris, you just said no, but Zach, is there a character that you liked in this?
No, not particularly. Like, Viv was like a fine like main character. Like, I was like happy like with her. But no, I agree with Chris. Like, I don't really need to see any of these people again.
I think the only one I really like, you know, like if he dies, I riot type person was Cal. But he had like 8 lines in the entire book. He was just like, hmm. That was like his only line, which is grunting. And so like, but I liked him as like a personality. He seemed great. Maybe that's because we're from Nebraska and like I knew like 8 guys exactly like Cal. But so maybe it's just like a easily relatable for me. But yeah, there wasn't anyone I want to see go forward.
Is there anything you guys would do? Like, you're the editor for this book. And this guy just handed you this book, you know, and you have to come up with like 1 or 2 notes. Like, is there anything you would change? Like, you know, not changing the whole book, obviously, but like a little thing here or there.
Like, either make real conflict with the Madrigal or take him out of the book. That was like a wasted 75 pages of them being like, the Madrigal's so scary. And then she meets her and it's just an old lady who's like, I love cinnamon rolls. I was like, okay.
Yeah.
Yeah,
what was the point of this?
I agree. Make him a threat. Like, on paper, I love the idea of Viv gets what she's looking for with a stone, uses a stone to find like a great location, retires, but people from her past come back to haunt her, and also she has to deal with like the new town, like the new town's threats. while also trying to like start a new life. Like that on paper sounds like great, but like, yeah, like what you're saying, Brandon, the local bad guys like were nothing. Yeah. And it was just kind of like a disappointing where it's like loop them into her past somehow, or like get rid of them or make them like a bigger threat.
Yeah. I there needed to be conflict, more conflict in this book. I know it's like supposed to be like an easy read, like, you know, a cozy, relaxing, but there needed to be some sort of like, I didn't really buy the whole Viv's internal conflict of like, oh, should I fight or not fight? I want to be a pacifist now. I didn't really care about any of that. From the first page, you could tell that she was never going to go back to fighting again. So that wasn't a real conflict. But there needed to be something external to her.
Yeah. Well, and while Fennis. we're talking about the Madrigal, I just wanted to say that she goes there, you know, it's this big production that they've set the Madrigal up to be this big bad. And then she goes there and she basically just tells her like, I like your spirit, like you're a go-getter. So I'm not actually going to like charge you. And I think what the author was going for there is just kind of like, haha, gotcha. You thought this Madrigal was going to be some big bad, but actually she's not. And they're kindred spirits. But it just didn't make any sense. Like, why would anybody be scared of this person if they make concessions like this just because they like a cinnamon roll? So it's just out of place, didn't work. And even for the tone the book was going for, I don't think it worked.
Yeah, I think they needed to give us some examples of like why the Madrigal is feared. If they're going to have the Madrigal be an integral part of this, like they were just like, oh, sometimes they do bad things. I was like, what kind of bad things? Like, what have they done in the past that makes everyone so scared of them? Have they burnt stuff down in the past? Have they killed people? Like, what have they done that makes everyone fear them so much? But
or give me a good reason for why the Madrigal is ignoring Viv. Like, come up with some reason that this person that essentially took over the whole city, why they would give a pass to Viv. Like, whether you do some magic yada, like yada yada magic or what, but give me something.
All you need to do is have Viv save Lark or something. Like, Lark is about to fall in a river and Viv crosses by and saves him. And then Madrigal is like happy that she saved one of his men or something like that. Like, sure. Just give us a reason. Yeah,
I agree. Yeah, I like that.
Yeah, the threat of the shop burning down, like, that did work for me. Like, I bought into that kind of threat because that's like the only thing that she has that she cares for. You can't like intimidate her physically. So you have to go after like what she loves. So that threat worked for me, but in the execution of it didn't quite, because all of a sudden like it burnt down and then they built back better like immediately afterwards, and it was like fine. I kind of wish that there's some more to it.
Yeah,
I think we're all in agreement on that. What about you, Chris? Was if you could like choose one thing to change or adjust, what would yours be?
You know, I actually really like your idea of having Viv maybe save one of the Madrigal's men. Like, I mean, I feel like you could easily write, it would just take one or two chapters of Viv using her physical strength and ability in some way that's good and useful, and saving somebody. Maybe it's just some chump off the street. She saves them, but it's actually the Madrigal's granddaughter or something like that. So then they're like, okay, well, maybe I'll give you some leeway here. You help me out, blibbity blop. But so that's a good idea. I like what you said there. I'd probably steal it.
Okay. Yeah. I don't know. All in all, it sounds like we're in agreement. It was a fine book. It was an easy read. It was fun to read, but it's not exactly in my vein of fantasy I like,
Yeah.
And so let's hit on some specific parts of the book that you wanted to talk through. Is there any parts right off the bat that you guys desperately want to talk about?
Yeah, the aesthetic. How did you guys feel about the aesthetic of the coffee shop? Kind of when it was said and done, they got the AC in there. I can't really remember, but I'm sure there was a crackling fireplace, playing some tunes, hanging out in a coffee shop. How'd you guys like it?
I loved it. Honestly. Yeah. Go ahead, Zach. Good.
No, yeah, I loved it. I love the way how like Viv describes it. I like the cover, even just like looking at the cover of the book, you can kind of see those like details. Like, it really worked. Like, this isn't my everyday fantasy, but I think it works as like a nice, cozy, like palate cleanser where you still want to have the magical creatures and stuff, but you just need a break. But it really worked for me.
Yeah, I think the author did a good job of mixing kind of the trope of the tavern and traditional fantasy with like a modern day coffee shop, kind of blending those together. That worked really well for me. Basically everything that had to do with the coffee shop, the menu, all of that, I actually really, really enjoyed that. It had a really, have you guys seen the movie Chef with Jon Favreau?
No.
It's one of my favorite movies. It's kind of similar to this where it's just, you know, guys starting a food truck and then, you know, figuring out how to do that. It's got a similar vibe to that. And so I really liked all of that aspect of it. That was like the real casual stuff. So yeah, that worked great for me.
Yeah, I totally in agreement with you guys. We sound like a broken record here, but the best parts of the book, the best parts of the book were the author describing this coffee shop and, you know, the little intricacies. I feel like you can tell that he fell in love with a coffee shop somewhere, wherever he's writing this book, you know, and he just goes there and he's looking around the shop and he's like, oh, I really love that detail. Let me write it into this book or something like that. I think it really comes out, really the author's love for coffee shops, which is just great. I love coffee shops. And to piggyback off what you said, Brandon, with the constant updating of the menu, that's another part I really liked about the book where, you know, the cinnamon roll got in and it's a updated menu and then cinnamon roll at the bottom. And then they added the little orange biscuit thing. And they added that at the bottom, kind of grew with you. At first, I almost thought it was a little like cheesy or whatever. But by the end of the book, I don't know, it won me over. I was like, ah, it's cute. I like it.
Yeah. See, that worked for me the very first time. And then I got really tired of it. I love the way how like they described coffee. And when the first customer had coffee, but I didn't need to see like literally 12 people's reaction to having coffee for the first time or all their orders. And same with like the cinnamon roll, like that was like perfect. It was great. I love like the adding of the menu, but then it was that hard biscuits and you had to like, they're questioning this biscuit's not going to work. And then, oh, it does. And it's the best thing ever. Oh, what's this chocolate? Ah, it tastes a little better than the next day. Oh, it's like sweet chocolate. Like, there's so many times where it's like the same thing where they invent like a sweet and then they're like, this isn't going to sell. And then they try it and it's like the best thing ever. And they just like add it onto the menu. It just got kind of like old after a while.
I feel that.
Well, you're wrong. No, I'm just kidding. no, but I can see that, you know, they did it like 7 times. So towards the end, I can see you getting a little exhausted by it, but I was exhausted by it every time the characters talked to one another. So when we had these parts, I was like, all right, this is cozy. And then I went to a Bavarian town out here in Washington this weekend, and they had essentially this exact coffee shop. It had cinnamon rolls the size of your head. It had spinning fans up in the ceilings. It had a musician playing. He's playing accordion in the corner. Like it, I went in there. I was like, holy shit, this is it. This is Legends and Lattes.
So our guy Travis Baldtree, does he live in Seattle?
I don't know, actually. I don't know anything about Travis Baldtree.
That'd be fun.
Yeah, I'm a person, I love coffee, and so especially the parts about coffee, I'm an exact contrast with you, Zach. I could listen to 50 pages of people talking about like trying coffee for their first time. I love coffee. It was like a love letter to coffee and lattes and stuff, so I really liked that aspect of it. And I feel like this is a great opportunity for Travis, the author, to get like a sponsorship on this, you know, like include like a bag of Starbucks with it. Cause I drink coffee every time I read this book. Cause they just made me like crave lattes every time.
Nice. what would,
all right. Fuck me, I guess. My bad.
I like coffee too, but yeah, I didn't drink a pot of coffee every time they talked about it.
Well, maybe you would have enjoyed the book more had you.
Yeah, I probably should have. But no, I mean, those parts were like when they talked about the cozy settings and them like trying the coffee and the iced coffee and all that, like that worked. I still need the whole like, what's this fancy thing? I don't know if I want to drink that. Like the whole preamble stuff, I didn't need. But then like describing the taste, like that worked. I just hated like the 12th like skeptical guest type of a interaction.
All right, Zach, what's a scene from the book that you really enjoyed?
Pause. I don't know. Like them describing the coffee, I guess. Like those like the early moments where they, she just like gets it and she like grinds it up herself and she has like her very first pot in her shop. Like, I like that.
Yeah.
That was cool. I don't know. It was kind of like all, there's like nothing that really like stood out for me besides like those little moments of her getting the coffee.
Mm-hmm. What about the gnome playing chess with himself? Did you guys like that scene?
Did they ever explain this? This is a note I had on here too. What is this?
I think he was just playing chess with himself. I mean, people do that. Like, they'll set up famous games or they'll set up certain situations. It's like a challenge to be able to get out of it without losing.
Yeah, so but didn't they say the pieces were like moving on their own? I really thought this was going to become like an integral part of the book, that like he was going to have some magic or something that we don't know about or something like that.
Maybe he's a ghost.
Honestly, and he knew all about the Scalvert Stone at the end. He's like, oh, I know all about that. I was like, what the fuck? I thought no one knew about this. Like, who is this guy?
Well, yeah, I guess I'm not sure. What about the guy that kept coming in because of the ley lines? And he's like, there's some weird shit going on in here. There's something happening. But he never wanted to buy anything. I personally liked that trope. Like, every time he'd come in, they'd be like, here you go, you got to buy this. And he'd be like, oh, no, I don't like hot drinks or some BS, you know?
Yeah.
It was another thing that kind of won me over by the end of it. I'm like, okay, it's a little familiar. I guess this author is good at familiarity. You know, he'll knock you over the head with it until you like it.
Yeah. I agree. This part was one that I was like, why is this in here at first? Like, this is dumb. But then I was like, oh, but there always is that one person at a coffee shop who's just there with like an entire setup of stuff and then no coffee or drink. It's like
the Wi-Fi.
It's very, yeah, free Wi-Fi. Exactly. This guy has free ley lines.
Yeah,
so,
free ley lines.
Yeah. Did you guys like our girl boss, Tandri?
Oh, man. I don't know how to say this nicely. So go ahead, Chris.
I didn't dislike Tandri. I don't have anything really. I'm almost fully neutral on Tandri. Nothing. It didn't really work for me. It didn't really not work for me.
I strongly disliked her. Like, just, I don't like convenience in fantasy. I know that like, every author does it where like something happens, like a convenient piece of like magic comes up or whatever, and then they solve their problem. But every single time they had an issue, she just knew exactly what they needed to do. It worked out perfectly. And like, it was just like, I don't know. She was fine. She was fine. I don't like that kind of character. She seemingly knew everything about the coffee business. Somehow
she's a girl boss.
I guess
she knows about like marketing and like the power of free samples and how to advertise and all that. I was like, what did you do in a past life? Like, I was waiting for like some big reveal of like who she was.
Was she related to the hospitality industry.
Yeah. Was she related to like one of the bad guys, you know? But yeah, it's like, what the hell, you know, about like free samples and pricing your menu a certain way. She knew about like a menu. That's what, like, Viv was pretty stupid. She had no idea about
it.
She didn't know that she had to like name her restaurant or like a menu or how to like, get customers. It's like
she put a rock under a floorboard and
she had a rock
did nothing
in a dream.
Else.
Yeah.
She had a rock in a dream. That's good.
You know, all of those people in college that you knew that were in the hospitality like major, and you're like, what are they gonna do with that? You know, that's Tandri. You just go find a random coffee shop and teach them how to do their business, I guess.
Yeah, absolutely.
I looked up Travis Baldry. He actually does live in Washington. So,
hey, I bet you've been in the same place. You should.
It might.
You should have him on the pod.
All right, I'll reach out.
Yeah. I got one more thing. One more plot point here. I wanted to hit on this one. It rubbed me the wrong way when I read it. And maybe you guys have some insight on it, help it make a little bit more sense. But whoever the old guy,
Cal
Fennis.
Oh, Fennis.
Yeah. Who kind of like used to be Viv's frenemy. He comes in and he introduces Viv to the Madrigal because he thinks they'll find something in common, quote. and to help like keep the peace, ostensibly. And it works. She meets the Madrigal. They make a deal and it's all fine. And then this guy comes back and he burns down the shop. Like, why did you introduce them? I didn't get it. I didn't get it when I first read it. I didn't get it when they tried to yada yada it a little bit later, being like, oh, he's just like sticking his foes against each other. But I don't know. It's weird. What do you guys think about that?
Yeah, I didn't really think about this till now. Zach, you got thoughts?
No, I agree with Chris. I thought it was kind of odd. A lot of that stuff was odd.
Yeah, well, I guess chalk it up to a plot hole or just a not the best decision from the author. I'm not sure. Just kind of weird.
It's all the all the conflict in this book just doesn't make sense. Now you're bringing this up. Like, what was his play? If he knew about the Scalvert Stone all along, why didn't he just come burn down the shop right away? Like,
right.
Why did any of this happen?
Yeah.
Yeah.
But hey, not every plot can be holeless.
Good.
It's my favorite kind of plot.
Yeah.
Well, I will say my favorite, I think probably my favorite was, I really liked Mr. Thimble.
The baker?
And yeah, the baker. And I really liked like just him creating like all of bakery, basically. Like every bake, like he just created like donuts and created like cinnamon rolls and like whatever those hard cracker things, the thin bits, which
yeah,
I loved those parts of it. I don't know if I missed this. Is he a rat?
Is his character? I think so. I don't know. I was just going to say he reminded me of Remy from Ratatouille, but I have no clue. Is he like a giant rat?
They called him a ratkin in the
ratkin,
book.
Yeah. I think he's just like a giant rat.
Or like ratty features, like Peter Pettigrew looking guy.
I'm picturing him like around this size, maybe 3 feet, 3 feet high. Oh. A little plump, maybe.
So you think of like an actual rat
to hold kitchen utensils?
Mm. Well, they used the words paws. They used the word, like, they never used hands. They never used feet. It was always paws. Like, and he would like scamper around. He was very small. He was definitely like 3 feet tall. I don't know. I know that like the food and safety organization probably doesn't exist in Thune yet, but I don't want a rat making anything for me, to be honest. Yeah. Maybe that makes me like, I don't know, discriminatory or whatever. Yeah.
I mean, Ratatouille, when I watch Ratatouille, it kind of like got rid of my prejudice. Like now I would definitely eat a meal created by a rat after I watch that. So mm-hmm. I was okay with it.
You have clearly never lived in a place that has a lot of rats, because I disagree strongly with that sentiment. Oh man. Did you guys read the end of the book, the pages to fill section?
No.
So they had, at the end of the book, they had, I don't know, it was 40 pages called Pages to Fill. It was basically the story of how Viv came across coffee. And I thought this would have been a really, really great part to have at the beginning of the book to give us some context of Viv as a character, context of these other people, these like Rune and Fennis and all these guys that she hung out with. It gave a lot of really good context on those characters. It wasn't particularly interesting or good, but I think it would have been really nice to have this at the beginning of the book, fill in some of those blanks. Because the story really just hops right into it. It's just like we could have taken out the Madrigal entirely and just had this at the beginning to give us some context and like know these characters a little bit more.
Yeah, I wouldn't mind if they had to do like a sequel. If I took advice on how to do a sequel, I would almost do it like Quoth's story in Kingkiller, almost where you just have these like four or five main characters like sitting around with a cup of coffee and they all just talk like stories about their past lives and stuff. So like every chapter will be someone's like backstory or like a little story, and you can get their cut-ins and butt-ins and stuff like that. But that's what I would do.
I think that would be great if she even told the story or like told some stories of her old life or just something in there to give us some context of who she is. Cause I reread whatever 300 pages. I didn't care about Viv one bit or any of Rune or Fennis, or I didn't care about any of them. So some backstory of any kind would have been good there. Last plot point I have is like, what did you guys feel about Viv and Tanjiro's relationship? Did you think it paid off? Do you think there was enough build up to that to make, you know, the argument for it? Like, did you like it? Did you think it could have gone without it? What were your thoughts?
Yeah, so Viv and Tanjiro didn't work for me very well. Obviously, in reading it, I could tell that I was supposed to be picking up on the fact that there was something there between the two of them. You know, like a line here or there about how Viv could feel Tanjiro's closeness, or how she doesn't know if she can trust the affection she feels for Tanjiro because she's a succubus or whatever. But their chemistry, it just wasn't there. Like, for two characters that are supposed to be in a romantic relationship, they didn't have like good banter or really anything. I feel like there's a lot of other characters in and like, this isn't normal people, you know, you're not reading this being like, these two are, they're meant for each other. Like, I can't wait until they get together. It was just kind of like, yeah, I guess they will. Okay.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
That's essentially how I felt about it. Zach, same for you.
Yeah. I mean, Viv had like stronger feelings for like Coffee Grounds.
Yes.
Than for what's her name.
Absolutely.
To be honest, like.
That's a great way to put it.
Yeah.
Yeah, and like, I don't like love in my fantasy book unless it's like incredibly pertinent to the storyline. Like, you know, if it's Princess Bride, you have to have a love story in there. But like, in general, I don't love like love in stories, especially not this. It's like her first real friend. It's like her first real connection with somebody, and then she just falls in love with that person. Like, I just wanted to see them be friends, then build each other up, and then make a successful business together.
Well, she had, in my opinion, way better chemistry with the carpenter. And I'm not saying that I wanted her and the carpenter to like hook up or anything, but just as two characters with like banter and dialogue, it was way better. I'm thinking back to Fairy Tale, the book we did a pod on not too long ago. And Mr. Bowditch and the main character, their chemistry was popping off the page. They had great chemistry together. It's just something that Viv and Tanjiro didn't have.
Yeah. These two are breaking up as soon as they sell the coffee shop. These two are breaking up. It's like the only thing like holding them together. It's like a classic like workplace romance.
Coffee keeps us together. Yeah, it's like her work wife that just actually like, oh shit, that's my life. My work wife turned into my real life. But
Tandry's gonna catch Viv like polishing her sword. She's gonna get like really pissed and walk out like, you're cheating on me with that fucking thing, aren't you? You took that out last night, didn't you? Your sword
is polishing your sword a euphemism, or what are we talking about here?
Yeah, no,
they did like really lean into like the lesbian stereotype of like them falling in love immediately and moving in with each other.
Yeah,
like, I don't know if that was done on purpose or not, but I'm like, it's a pretty hardcore stereotype of like lesbians that they'll like move in with each other on the first date. And
yeah,
they literally did that in this book.
I didn't know that was a stereotype, but yeah, that exact thing happened.
Yeah.
All right. Awesome. So we don't have a lot of lore from this since it's not like a series or anything, but one piece that was mentioned in here was Viv says that the latte was created in the gnomish town of Athenium by a guy named Latte Diameter, which I thought was a hilarious name. But I was curious about like actually where did the latte come from? Is that like based off a real person? And it was created by Lino Miorian in California in the 1950s, but wasn't actually made popular until it came to Seattle in the 1980s, when Seattle baristas started doing like the art on the top of the lattes. And that's when it became like widespread, really popular across the country. Huh, so cool.
Was that at the original Starbucks that they did that? In the 80s?
Probably not. I don't know. I didn't say which coffee shop, but Starbucks isn't that innovative, so probably not. But that was basically
the
only lore we had from this. This, and I thought the Dire Cat was an interesting character. It kind of like vanishes and shows up and stuff, but we didn't really get a whole lot of lore from it. So that was the only bit that I got from it. Being from Seattle, that was interesting. That was the only reason. You guys have any like highlights, lowlights? We kind of talked through some of this already. Any additional ones that we missed, highlights wise?
I got a couple here, actually. So highlights for me, when the shop burned down, that was actually a highlight for me. Just because, you know, it's like a daring thing to do for the author to burn down the shop in that moment and to not have Viv like do anything about it. It burned down and she was forced to accept it. She didn't lose her cool and go kill the guy. So I definitely think the author succeeded in, I don't know, vanquishing that trope there. So I liked how that was done. Highlights for you guys. I have one more, but maybe you guys can go.
No.
None from Zach, I guess.
Well, nothing that we've talked about. Like I said, the scenes where they're just like chilling, drinking coffee were my highlights. The low lights were them convincing everyone to drink coffee. Like I've done with like five less of those.
Oh my god. I thought one of my highlights was when Pendry, the guy that started, he came in for the first time, starts playing music, and he's like playing something that no one had ever heard of, which in my head I was thinking it was like metal or something like that, like metal rock. And same. Just that idea was very funny to me. Like no one had ever heard metal before, and this guy comes in and is just like, and everyone's like, holy shit, this is awful. I just liked that part. I thought it was
funny. That was good. I'll say my second highlight was I actually really liked when you did your summary, Brandon. You had a little comment, so I'm not sure if you like this part, but I actually really liked the reveal at the end that the stone doesn't just make you lucky; it attracts like to like. And I think that did a pretty good job of addressing the fact that there just happened to be all these amazing, talented, kind-hearted people that just happened to be at her shop just like right as she began. Like she's in the shop and you have this amazing baker. He just like happens to be there, and this great builder who do all this stuff for essentially for free. He just happens to be there as well. So I thought that was a little plot holey when I was reading it. And then they're like, well, it's just because the stone attracts people like to like, and I was like, okay, well, that's a pretty good, as far as explaining that, I thought it did a pretty good job. So I did like that.
Yeah, except if they were going to attract like to like, it would have attracted people that had no idea how to run a coffee shop to Viv. That was my thing about it. I was like, it would have just like got a bunch of bumbling idiots together. The shop would have gone out of business in like 15 minutes.
Yeah. It is a cool concept though, especially like if a bad guy has it, who's it attract?
Like the Elder Wand, right?
Yeah. Okay. Kind of. That part's cool. I wasn't sold on the like all of these perfect people. It had a guy that created rock music, a guy that creates the cinnamon roll, a lady that knows everything about coffee shop management. Like it just seemed a little, once again, convenient, I guess is the word for it. But
that's fantasy. You know, every fantasy story is like that. You have like the wizard that shows them the way, and all these like convenient things happen to the main characters.
That's why I appreciated there was at least an explanation in here to be like, yeah, I know, wink wink, this is all very convenient. This is why it's all very convenient. So I appreciated that.
Cool. Any lowlights from you, Chris? Or Zach? Zach, you already kind of said yours, but Chris, any from you?
Yeah, well, and I kind of mentioned it before, but the Madrigal not forcing Viv to pay just because she liked her or something. That was probably my lowlight. The real question here is, would you rather have a dire cat or a dire wolf?
Wolf. Yeah.
Wolf.
Yeah. Well, I don't know, actually. Dire cat, the fact that it can, like, transportate like that, or, it would be pretty convenient. It can kind of just wink in and out where you need it. That's pretty handy.
If you could go with it, that'd be very useful. I'd probably pick a wolf as well, but I did like the dire cat. I thought it worked. You know, it's like a coffee shop cat. You know, there's going to be a cat in the coffee shop, and it'll just appear around your shoulder. You'll be like, oh gosh, I didn't see that cat there. Where'd it come from? But so that was well done.
Correct me if I'm wrong. This thing was like the size of a bear. Correct. Yeah. Like it was huge.
Massive. Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
That seems like it's not great for bringing in customers, but I don't know. I guess the gnomes love it, so whatever.
Yeah.
The only other low light I had, I think, is Like, I wish we would have gotten more information about the ley lines. Like, they set them up at the beginning to be like this really important thing, and then they weren't important at all. Like, I didn't really understand like what their purpose in this book was. Was it just because they like activated the stone because she was in the perfectly right spot, or like why were they there?
Yeah,
I think so. I think they must have some magical properties, or that's where like the magic is the most concentrated at, so it helps with the stone. It's kind of like how I read it.
Okay. Maybe I'm just too dumb to understand it, but yeah, I didn't really have any other low lights. My low light was like most of the characters when they talked. So let's go through some other just outstanding questions we might have from the book, our little mailbag section here. Is Thune or Thrune or whatever it was, Thune, was that a city that you'd want to live in? Did that seem like a fun place to be? Would you want to set up your coffee shop there?
No, I don't know. It depends on how the Madrigal, whatever they're called, like if I have Madrigal. To pay them, yeah, if I have to pay them all the time, I would hate that. But if I could just bribe them with like a pastry instead, then I get like, yeah. Then it'd be like a perfect spot.
Seems pretty easy.
But if there's these like weird thugs stuff to like pay like tithes to, then I wouldn't like that.
Yeah, I mean, I think I would. I didn't really get a great sense of the city reading this, but it seemed like, you know, in general, it was a fun magical world in tone. So I am okay with living in that tone that was kind of established in this book. You know, nothing's really, even the Madrigal is not even that dangerous. You know, just pay or whatever, you'll be fine. So I guess so.
Yeah. It seems, I mean, the people seem more than ready to help out with literally anything you need, especially the mafia. So that's a good start.
Yeah. You
know, it's an interesting point. They gave her like, what, 10 cinnamon rolls a month, maybe, to pay her off? Were these other people paying like $30 a month just to pay off the mafia? That's crazy. well, anyways, let's see. What other fictional character would you want to see open up a cafe? I like that.
I got it.
That's a good question.
I got this one. Rock from Stormlight Archive.
I was thinking of that too.
Yeah. You're thinking Rock one. Too? I'd love to, he's that owner of the shop or restaurant or whatever that he's like a myth. He's like a legend. You know, he'll come out of the kitchen. He'll say hi to everybody. They're like, oh man, it's Rock. He'll be like, you enjoying the food? They'll be like, yeah. He'd be like, oh, you airsick lowlanders, you know, we'll have a chuckle. He would absolutely rock it. No pun intended.
I want to see him open like an Italian restaurant. I feel like that's really where he would like really fit in.
Yes.
Yeah.
He strikes me as the kind of guy that can match a nice Pinot with some pasta or something.
I would like to see the Lopin maybe opening up like a comic stand-up, like comic shop. I could see him.
Yeah.
Like, okay with that. Bad like that, or like Sam Gendry from Lord of the Rings, open up like a...
Oh.
Either just like a straight up cafe would be kind of a cozy read, or like a garden center. I think that'd be good.
Do you mean Gendry or
Samwise?
The fat guy.
Samwise, yeah. Oh. Yeah, Frodo's.
Oh, Samwise Gamgee. Sorry, I was way
off. Yeah.
I thought you were talking about Gendry from Game of Thrones.
Oh, ew, no.
He's opened up a brothel, that's for sure. Yeah. I think my character would be Fezzik from The Princess Bride. I want to see him open up like, what? I don't know, like a boxing ring or something like that.
Okay.
Something like that. I feel like he would just be a great store owner of any kind. He'd be horrible at the account. He essentially is Viv, if I'm going to be honest. Like,
oh my God. Yeah.
A guy with no knowledge about anything, just a loving heart and a great fighter, opens up a restaurant, see what happens.
Yeah. What would you, okay. Jon Snow is a character that I want to have like a relaxing life. What kind of business would you give like Jon Snow to like operate or own or have for, like a cozy fantasy?
Oh, that's a good question. Does it have to be in the North?
No, it doesn't have to be like in that universe. But if you had to be like, Jon Snow, you've been through a lot. I'm going to pluck you out. And this is going to be like your life, your cozy little career.
He would be a guide. He would be a guide for like dangerous trails and stuff. So
okay.
This didn't have to be in the north, but this is now in the north. Like everybody's coming down and they're exploring the new lands, and there's a lot of really cool natural formations and things. And so John, he just owns a little pop and shop B&B, and he takes his guests up the mountain, make sure they're safe, and they get back down and everything's good. And Ghost is always out watching, making sure.
That's a good one. Yeah, that's nice and cozy. It's a good answer.
I like that. I think I would say he should open up like an axe throwing brewery, and then their whole
not archery.
No, not archery. No, axe throwing, and then their whole like slogan is like, anytime someone's like, "How do I do this?" He just says, "You stick him with the pointy end," something stick like that.
Oh, that's good.
Yeah.
Oh, if it's an archery range, the logo for this archery range is going to be somebody on a horse with three arrows sticking through him, you know, and like kind of falling over like that. It's called egrets.
No, egrets. Oh no.
Or you can. Oh my God, what's his little brother's name?
Rickon.
You can name it after Rickon. It could be Rickon's.
Rickon's. Yeah. Hell yeah. So good.
The logo is just a kid with an arrow through his heart. Part of the archery range, though, is they teach you how to run in zigzags.
Right, exactly. That's like the biggest. That's the biggest thing.
It's like just a whole agility course. They shoot arrows at you while you do the agility course.
Yeah.
All right. What other questions we got here?
Zach, you had one here.
Yeah, Zach, let's go in yours.
Like, yeah. If you had to open up a shop, what would it be?
Oof.
Like what, you know, kind of like, there's no coffee here. She saw a demand because most fantasy worlds don't have
this
coffee
in this
shop.
World. What would I open up?
Yeah. Kind of, or like a generic fantasy world. Cause like, there's no really like coffee places. I was thinking maybe like a gym fitness center. I know there's some like training grounds, but like an actual like have yoga classes,
like a formalized gym.
Yeah, like actual like structured gym.
That's pretty good.
That's a good one. Oh man,
I'd open up a bank.
I think they had those.
Mine would be better.
What would you do differently, Chris? What would make your bank better?
At a fantasy bank. I would simply use magic to create money for my customers. How about that?
Oh, that's going to lead to hyperinflation real quick. You're not going to want that.
I'll skip town.
Yeah, there you go. Okay. That's smart. Man, that's a tough question. I think I would just open a library. I feel like people would be like, what the fuck? Where'd all these books come from? I feel like all the books are so centralized in fantasy books. So like having like a public library would change the game.
Definitely.
All right. So I think we wanted to talk about the TikTokness of this book. And I don't really understand TikTok because I'm old as shit. So in my heart, I'm old as shit. Zach, tell us about the TikTokness of this book.
Well, there seems to be like certain books that are like super well known for blowing up on TikTok. Like this book here was like a big one. A lot of like the Colleen Hoover books that everyone's probably heard of were really popular. Colleen Hoover.
Not familiar.
Yeah.
I mean, I've heard that they're good vacuums, but I haven't heard like,
like the author.
Definitely clean.
Yeah. But there's some like other big ones like the Midnight Library. I know a lot of, like the Court of Thorn and Roses was like another big one.
Oh, sure.
But yeah, there's just like a whole.
So does being a TikTok book just mean it's bad, or what makes it like what do people do to make these books popular? Is it just people like dancing with a video? Because that's all I know about TikTok, or dancing with a book. I mean,
no, it's just a lot of kind of like any like YouTuber. They have those like on TikToks where they rank like their favorite books and stuff. It's mostly like the marketing where like the marketing's advertising as like a TikTok book or as seen on TikTok. If that's like the primary use of advertisement, then, you know, it's probably going to be pretty bad.
Well, so you're saying if you've only seen like five guys on TikTok say that, oh, this is in my top five books, check it out, you're saying that that's not a good endorsement, or is it a good endorsement?
In your experience.
Usually those are kind of like 50-50. It's when they're like on everyone's lists and it has like a crap ton of likes. And then when you can browse bookstores next to it, it'll have a sticker as like popular on TikTok. Like those are the books that you need to like stay away from.
Oh, like I don't like here. A sticker that says popular on TikTok. That is, well, I mean, it's boomer energy right there.
Yeah. I mean, it's like one of those, like the bookshop makes those stickers, you know, kind of like how Barnes & Noble will have like staff picks. It's like that, like with TikToks.
Okay.
So, I mean, you'll see a lot of it on like this book here is probably like a big TikTok one. It's like the Colleen Hoovers. But yeah, usually like these book lovers, like the Emily Henry books, I don't know. From all like the TikTok books that I've read, I have not liked like a single one.
Wow.
So usually if it's like advertised for me as like a TikTok book, I kind of like run away.
Well, you guys, we read Small Gods. I guess I'm not sure where that's at in the timeline, if we've released that one yet, but I discovered that book from TikTok. There was a couple guys, there was a little clip on TikTok. They were like, this book is fantastic. This is a 9.5. This is a 10 out of 10. So that kind of piqued my interest and I checked it out. And I got to say, I liked Small Gods. I didn't think it was as good as they thought it was. But I guess that's a kind of at least one positive experience I've had. But I guess you're probably not getting, well, the people that were recommending this book, like, were they fantasy fans or were they book TikTok people, I guess?
I guess both. I guess a lot of times, like, on my For You page, I'll pop up at, like, random, like, TikTokers. Just be like, if you want a fantasy book that's not very fantasy, like, here's this. Yeah.
Accurate.
Yeah. So I think maybe that's why I gained popularity. But I don't know. If you see a book that's on TikTok, I would like Google the book. And if the first few things that come up are like related to TikTok, then I'd probably be like run away.
That's a really great way to kind of go through that minefield. Like, because if you're not finding any reviews like outside of TikTok, then maybe it's just a fad.
Yeah. Or if articles are like, this blew up on TikTok. I don't know. Cause like sometimes like you'll hear like songs like, or, you know, blow up and then that becomes like a TikTok song. And those are like annoying versus like songs that stood out on their own, or you just like a part of the song, but the rest of the song sucks. I don't know.
Yeah.
Like another thing too, a lot of the people who are reviewing it, I mean, TikTok is for kind of a generation younger than us.
Sure.
So a lot of what they like or find interesting, we might not like. So I think a lot of that is, it's a lot of like YAE kind of,
are we
not,
sure,
not well written.
Did Gen Z, do they even read books? Is that, are we sure?
Yeah. About that? Yeah. They're the ones that read like the Colleen Hoovers and
just kidding. I love my Gen Zs.
Oh my God. They're Emily, the ones Emily that did the Colleen Hoovers.
And like Colleen Hoover's like millennial and Gen X. Same with like Emily Henry.
But okay. Yeah. Just say I don't know anything about TikTok. How long can TikToks be? Are they like, is there like a time limit on it, or can it be like 30 minutes if you want
it? It can be like 3 minutes.
Yeah, 3 minutes max. Yeah.
So this is just people being like, hey, I liked this book, you should read it, and that's the end of the TikTok?
No. Sometimes they'll have like in-depth discussion. I mean, you can get a lot of information out in 3 minutes on a TikTok if you really want to. Some TikToks are short and sweet, and some of them are very informative.
Some of it's like, yeah, I have some like magazines, but it'll be like my five favorite books, and I'll like hold up like each thing like this, and like a stupid song will be playing, and then they'll just like put it down.
Yeah, like and they'll have graphics that show like ratings or why they liked it and stuff. Mm-hmm. It'll get pretty creative with it.
Yeah. Just like little things like that. We'll send you some.
I will certainly look at those. do we think these are like paid advertisements then? Like, are like publishers... Oh.
Some of them.
Influencers?
Some of them are.
Some of them are, for sure.
Because, like, okay, don't get me wrong, this was not a bad book by any means. It wasn't, like, for me, but, like, for it having whatever 30,000 reviews on Goodreads at like 4.5 stars, like that's reserved for like the top of the top, and this is not that. And so I'm just like trying to figure out like how that happened, I guess.
Maybe it's just like so different for a lot of the people that really liked it than what they normally read because of the fantasy elements. So it's like, man, I've never read anything with a with an orc in it or a succubus, and that I actually kind of enjoyed. So they like very excited about it and give it like a really high rating. They're like, I didn't think I liked fantasy books, but this was awesome. You know, you kind of like get something out of it, a little extra push.
Yeah, probably a lot like 15, 16 year olds who haven't read too much enjoy this,
or maybe it is like a new book. It did come out this year, so you get a certain amount of buzz for being brand new as well.
Yeah, and I think something that we might be like downplaying, it's like a really positive book, all things considering. And there's
that's true.
And fantasy right now is in this like grim, dark, gritty, lots of deaths and violence and fantasy. So it might be like kind of like a refresher. Hell yeah. It might be pretty like refreshing for those like people who read like a lot of fantasy to be like a nice like palate cleanser.
I think that's a great point.
I think that's an awesome point. And it was for sure. But like about halfway through, I was like, all right, my palate's cleansed. I want to read more gritty death now. So
that's good.
Thank you for that explanation, because I don't know anything about TikTok and I didn't know that was even like a segment of the internet. So good to know. Now let's never talk about TikTok on this podcast ever again. Break. All right, great. any other questions you guys have from the book? Anything else you wanted to discuss? If Travis releases, you know, a sequel to this, let's say it's completely different characters, new storyline, would you read, but it's like in the same world, would you read that book?
Ooh.
Yes. I would read a book by this author set in this world or a world similar to it with a similar tone. I would like different characters.
Yeah, I agree. And I'd probably wait for me to be in the mood for like a kind of like a cozy palate cleanser story. I couldn't just like, it wouldn't be like a day one release type of a book like some other fantasy authors. It has to be like when I'm in the mood. But yeah, definitely.
Would you read this book again if it was rewritten by John Gwynn, who wrote Hunger of the Gods, Shadow of the Gods?
I don't think I would like this book if John Gwynn wrote it. I don't know what this book would be. It'd be fighting with its own nature there.
Yeah. Some ways it'd be better, some ways it'd be worse. I think it would lose the coffee descriptions and just like coziness of it. But he would do a lot better job of like connecting the threats to the main story. So there'd be some like trade-offs.
Well, I think it's interesting. It seems there's some books out there like this, but I think the author really like made his own category of like anti-fantasy almost. You know, it is fantasy, but it stays away from all of like the general fantasy tropes. And so I don't know. I think it's interesting. I think we'll see it.
Anti-fantasy, I like it.
Yeah.
I think we're going to see a lot more books come up in this subgenre, or whatever you want to call it. So I'm curious.
I would love to explore that made-up genre that you just created. I would love to. I'd love to read a bunch of books like that.
Yeah. Well, I think we all have wanted to. Like, something that I liked about this, that I think I already said, was there's so many times you're reading a fantasy book and you're just like wanting the character to turn around, or you wish they were going through some less stuff, or you just...
Yeah.
You know, it's like you don't have to do this. And it's so nice to like, it's almost like cathartic to like read a fantasy character make that decision of like, yep, I'm going to retire and start fresh. And I don't have too much baggage and I'm going to start a new life. It's, you kind of wish some other fantasy characters did it. So I liked it for that way, where it kind of helped out for all those times you wished other characters made different decisions.
Yeah.
Well, I have a list of about 10 more that are like this, are similar. So maybe we can try another one here in a few weeks.
And a fantasy.
Anti-fanty. All right. Well, I think that's all we have today. Did you guys want to pick an MVP, LVP real quick?
I mean, Val, MVP, I guess.
Yeah. Viv? Caffeine addiction, MVP.
Yeah. Coffee.
Coffee MVP. That's the final answer.
Yeah, definitely. LVP, Fennis. Okay, we'll cut that out. Sorry, yeah, and I think that's all we have for you today. Thank you, everyone, for listening. We'll be back in a couple weeks here with another book for y'all. Make sure that you're checking out our fantasy news updates in the weeks in between when we do books. We're just talking very, very casually about just stuff in the fantasy world that interests us or that we saw come through. A lot of it doesn't even have to do with fantasy. So definitely check that out. Rate, subscribe, wherever you're listening. Check out us on Twitter, Instagram. Look at our personal Twitters and Instagram sometime if you want to, too. I'm sure you can find them. We appreciate our fans.
They're the only people. They're the only people liking the tweets, so you'll be able to find us pretty easily.
Yeah, it's pretty simple. It's not. It doesn't take Sherlock Holmes, but yeah, we appreciate everyone that is listening. And as always, we are the Knights of the Hardcover.